was an article last week that said MTV is releasing all of its 80s material from 1981 to 1989. Let's bring in one of the original VJs that started it all. It is Alan Hunter. Brother, how are you?
What is up, my friend?
It's good to hear your voice again, and you need to explain this to me. What is going on? Because I want my MTV.
You and everybody else, but it's never coming back, pal. Just like things that this virus is going to change in life. I think MTV of old is no more, but that's okay. It's called evolution.
Well, what was that article last week that said they're going to release the 80s? Where is that? Where can I find it?
Well, for one, I'm trying to find that same article. There was one human being, a guy who's had a pretty active website over the years. Maybe it's a Facebook page. This dude had so much VHS content from the old days, and he's been putting it up online for years. And apparently he finally had a lot of people, I think Martha Quinn had something to do with this, that noticed that it was there. And so as of a couple of weeks ago, I got a note from Martha saying, did you see this? And it's the same guy who's been sort of building this catalog forever.
Right.
I believe the thing has already been taken down, and by, I wonder who, Viacom.
I was just going to say, wait a second, you can't put that up there without Viacom saying, hey.
Well, yeah, you know, a lot of people, there's another guy who's got a website who had a ton of beta tapes, so
okay,
really high quality air checks from the day that he was starting to put it up, but you know, he kind of flew under the radar. This guy all of a sudden had a lot of notice, and I think Viacom laid heavy on him.
A lot of people have time on their hands during the pandemic, don't they? And they're just,
yeah,
most people are grabbing old pictures of their family. You have guys like this putting up material from MTV. It's just crazy.
Yeah, look, yes, boredom is going to create a lot of great archives of stuff maybe we don't want to see again. I guess I want to see my time with Bon Jovi in Jamaica. some of the spring break stuff, I'm not sure I want to see again ever, but it is amazing how much of this stuff crops up on YouTube. Every day another video of us doing something back in the day comes up, and I don't know where they got it. I don't know where these people got it.
Of course, right? Because people hold on to everything. But last week, the internet blew up. It was something about MTV. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. You mean in as regards the videos that are being put up online or something else?
I'm talking about Kurt Loder's birthday.
Oh. I guess that blew up the internet, didn't it? That blew people's minds that they thought, my God, he's 75? Yeah, I know, that was weird.
Kurt Loder turned 75 last week. I can't
crazy.
Believe it.
You know, even Mark Goodman texted me that day and said, holy cow, I didn't know he was 75, and we know Kurt.
Oh my gosh, how old was he when he was doing MTV News?
I have no idea. I mean, Kurt came on about a year after Mark and I, who were the last to leave, left in 87. Maybe Kurt came on. I don't even know if he was there in the 80s. Did he come in the very beginning of the 90s, maybe?
Okay.
But it was so fun to have Kurt, who, of course, I love Kurt's writing and still do. And he was writing for Rolling Stone, calling all of us VJs airheads at Live Aid. So
right,
we thought it was funny that he finally joined the enemy. But he gave a lot of street creds to MTV when they started to try to promote more news, which was the right direction to head.
Right.
You know, the serious source for music news, and to have Kurt Loder at the head made sense. But, yeah, a lot of people are going, my God, I can't believe he's that old.
How old were you when you started at MTV back in 1981?
I was 23. I was a year or two out of college up in New York, you know, trying to be an actor. And got this crazy audition, and I took off in an entirely different direction.
It was you, Nina Blackwood, J.J. Jackson, Martha Quinn, and, of course, Mark Goodman. And
that's it.
We had Mark on a few days ago. Mark said that you and Martha and him are just still in touch, and you're like brothers and sisters.
Well, we are with Nina as well. Nina lives up in the northeast part of the country. We don't know where she lives exactly, like what street. We think she lives on maybe a spaceship or something, but she lives in the woods of Maine.
Wow.
We're like, Nina, really?
Isn't
she loves
crazy?
Cold weather and isolation, so she's perfectly suited for these isolated times right now. But we are all brothers and sisters in arms for life. I mean, we went through this amazing thing together. Only five of us did what we did for 8 years. And, you know, if JJ were still around, he'd be communicating with us. But even though we live in very different areas of the country, we're always emailing one another. And when we see each other on a cruise or an 80s event or something, it's really pretty special.
You lived in Evanston for how many years?
I did, 6 years. My wife was getting her PhD at Northwestern, and we lived up there for 6 years. Moved last summer to San Francisco. So while you've got 45-degree weather, and I think you had snow flurries the other day.
Yesterday, it was snowing. I looked out the window here. We're on the 18th floor, and I see snow flurries. I'm like, there it is. It's May in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Man, I'll tell you, I'm an Alabama boy, but when I moved from warmer weather to Chicago, I love Chicago, by the way. My daughter lives there with her husband, and I would move back in a heartbeat. But I remember around May, looking at early on when I was there, looking at Chicago, and who'd lived there their entire lives, people you'd think would get used to it, looked at me and said, "This is bull. This is crazy. This cold weather in May." And I go, "If you're freaking out, I'm now done."
That is so Chicago. We forget. We forget every single year that there is no spring anymore.
You have amnesia like a woman who's given birth four or five times. It's like, oh, I forgot. I hate this.
Oh, my gosh. That is so funny.
But nothing better than spring in Chicago, and I only hope that we're all able to at some point get out and enjoy it.
I hope you're right. We're talking with Alan Hunter, who was one of the original VJs from MTV. You know, one of my fondest moments here at WGN is when you guys celebrated your 35th anniversary. I had you on the air. I had Mark Goodman on the air. I had Martha Quinn on the air. What are you guys doing for the 40th? Because I'd love to have you three back on here at WGN again.
You know, we put out a book a couple of years ago, and we've been trying to do the audio book forever. People have kind of clamored for it, and that's the new thing these days. And so right before this pandemic hit, at the end of last year, we were finally discussing how we were going to hook up with Audible and put the book together. So now that's on hold for a moment. As we try to plot a plan, you know, we can't plot the plan on our own for some sort of 40th anniversary celebration.
Right.
My guess is that MTV, Viacom, MTV Networks, has never wanted to look back. And I don't begrudge them that so much. They were always very forward thinking. That was the beauty to me of MTV, was that it was always changing and morphing and moving ahead, and they never wanted to look back. I don't think there's a plan afoot at all for any kind of 40th celebration. We'll probably do something on Sirius XM. Martha, of course, works for iHeart now. But, you know, we'll all gather somewhere. But yeah, I would like, there's a group of fans that have put together a page to put us into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. By the way, I got no opinion on that. Whether we should be in that or not is not up to us.
That is just...
All of us are... We're all a little too humble to believe that we really should be in that, to be honest, with all the great artists there.
You shaped, you were the fabric of our lives in the 80s. For 80s kids like me, that's what we grew up with. And, you know, when you think of the 80s, the biggest concert, in my opinion, in my lifetime was Live Aid, and you were there.
Yeah.
And that shaped a generation. Take me back to July 14th, 1985. You're at the stadium in Philadelphia. It started in Wembley. And then in Philly, what was that like being there that day?
Well, it was a mind blower. I mean, we'd been 4 years into MTV at that point. We kind of Pied Pipered this audience of, you know, pretty wide demographic of people to just enjoy crazy, fun music videos. And then all of a sudden, we've got a social conscience. And what bigger and better way than to jump on board Live Aid? The day we showed up that morning, I actually was there the day before doing some pre-interviews and watching the build-out at the JFK Stadium, or RFK. Is it RFK or JFK?
I think it's RFK.
RFK, yeah, in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
But we knew it was going to be huge, and we got a sense as the artists continued, the list of people that were going to be on that day continued to build right up to the day of, you know. When we opened up that morning and came onto the set and realized that we were 20 yards stage left of some of the most historic performances that were going to happen,
right?
You know, ever, that was pretty amazing. And I think you know, when Kurt Loder mentioned, you know, kind of reviewed the day and said that the MTV quotient was good because we at least broadcast it on television, but that the VJs sometimes seemed at a loss for words. You know, it was very difficult to be Walter Cronkite watching Led Zeppelin reunite and watching Queen do their thing and
right.
Madonna come on stage and
right.
U2 and have anything more than, oh my God, wow, wasn't that great?
Alan, when you have Phil Collins that does a set at Wembley Stadium, takes the Concorde, gets the Philadelphia, does a set, and then plays drums for Led Zeppelin, what are you going to add to that?
Yeah. Well, the funny thing was, I think for the four of us that were there, JJ was over in the UK, but in between sets, we would wander down the backstage area, which was an assembly of RVs. And you'd have Jack Nicholson over, you know, in one hanging with Mick Jagger, and then a sports star hanging with, you know, David Crosby. It was just an amazing backstage area.
Right.
And we would, with our producer and camera, just wander around bumping into people. Hello, Tina Turner, can we talk to you? They all knew who MTV was and knew that we were the major broadcast source. Everybody was very into it. It was very familial.
Of course.
But for me to be pushed in the middle of Led Zeppelin seconds after they came off stage, in what was not the best musical performance, but nobody could really analyze it the day of. You know, it was just a cacophony.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't realize that the sound was crappy and that they were under-rehearsed. But I could feel when my producer pushed me in the middle of Robert Plant, Jimmy Page, John Paul Jones, and Phil Collins that something was off and there was tension. Robert Plant was a little pissed. Jimmy was pissed in a very different way, like just out of it.
Right.
Phil Collins looked like a deer in the headlights, like, oh my God, what just happened? So that was probably one of the more amazing moments for me to be in the middle of a historic event like that.
Right. Robert Plant, Alan, has said to this day, that's one of the worst performances of his life at Live Aid.
Yeah. Well, he, you know, even at that point, he didn't want to go back. I just love his career and his ethos is moving forward. What's my new experience? What can I discover again? And he never really wanted to go back. And they just didn't have enough rehearsal. You know, Phil barely knew. Phil knew the songs like we all know the songs, but it just didn't matter. I mean, the main thing was that there were some brilliant performances. U2, you know, became international superstars at that point. Queen's
right.
performance was one of the highlights. But anybody else who stepped on the stage, whether it was in the UK or here, upped their career, you know, at that point.
Right.
So it was the 17 hours, exhausting hours, that was so important. And we just felt like we had done something more than just, you know, frivolous pop entertainment that day.
I got to tell you, I watched start to finish. I was with my high school buddies that day, and I could go right back to my buddy Dan Eiler's house and see ourselves watching that Live Aid all day long. It was wonderful.
That's a riot. That's a riot. Well, I've never gone back to watch the DVDs or anything. Again, the performances were not, you know, it wasn't a great musical scenario, except with a few highlights.
Right.
It was just more the import of the day. And you can't, it's hard to take it out of the context of that day, I think, and relive it, really. Because, you know, to this day, they've raised, what, $250 million for people around the world.
Right. It's just
so it's a great event. And really, yeah. So the start of that kind of giving back to society that I think was so important.
A few more minutes with Alan Hunter, one of the original MTV VJs. Spring Break. Mark Goodman told me that he never, ever had a chance to go on Spring Break. They always sent you. Why was that?
Well, I don't know if Mark wanted to. Mark didn't like the cacophony as much as I did. I thrived in chaos. And my real, you know, we all had our strengths. Mark was interviewing rock stars. I loved interviewing, but that wasn't my. I didn't like it as much as messing around with the people who watched MTV.
Right.
So they began to push me out of the studio more and more to go and interact with people. And that was kind of the beginning of reality TV, which is people wanted to be on TV themselves. So we turned the cameras around at Spring Break. Sometimes we caught people without their shirts on.
Right.
And I caught people in a lot of compromising situations in hotel rooms and back in the day when we could actually interact with each other. But for me, I just really like getting in the muck. I love throwing a microphone down and doing a belly flop into the pool. I liked getting a pie in the face.
Mm-hmm.
And that Mark didn't like that because Mark liked his hair too much. You know,
he didn't want the big afro.
He didn't want to curl his locks up. So I was kind of built for that, and I really think that was my forte, was a microphone in hand talking to just average folks. That's when I did the Amok in America trip across America for 30 days.
That was
tons of fun.
I love the MTV.
I love the spring breaks,
Alan. I loved them. I went to Daytona 1 year, but you were already gone from MTV at that point. But it's just one huge party down there.
Well, it was, there's a great documentary, I think it's still on Showtime, called Spring Broke. And you got to watch it. It was actually put together by one of the guys that worked at MTV, but it was the story of MTV basically invading like a herd of locusts the poor town of Daytona and Fort Lauderdale. I forget which came first, but I was there for both of them. And all those towns were already hedonistic and debauched, but then when MTV came down and shone the cameras on those people, they just went even, more wild. And then we would just pick up and leave, and the town was like a lover who had been abandoned,
Right,
like,
of course.
Where's my cigarette? And we were done and gone. But those were interesting times. I had my first child in 1986, and my wife would hold my 3-month over her head like Lion King as I'm interviewing the Hawaiian tropic ladies. She goes, "Remember where you came from," Very difficult.
Did you had some bands down there, right? You had a few. I think I remember seeing MC Hammer 1 year, but who was down there that sticks out in your mind?
Well, I don't know. I think it was Starship at one point. The Beastie Boys certainly were.
Right, I remember that.
The second year, as I remember. The music was almost irrelevant. The concerts were great. And I always have to go back and Wikipedia who was actually playing down there.
Right.
It was like wake up in the morning time and pedal to the metal for me. I mean, I was just in a state of constant don't know where I am. Hey, the producer would shove me in front of a 1,000 screaming young college men drinking beer and tell me to make something up, and I would.
If you did a 40th anniversary spring break, I would absolutely go. I would go, and I could get all my friends to go. Maybe that's what we do.
I was down in Miami not long ago, and for some reason I had to go up to Fort Lauderdale, and the minute I hit the outskirts of the town, I smelled stale beer and suntan lotion, Hawaiian Tropic suntan lotion, and I almost puked.
Yep.
It was like I had a sense memory of those times. Oh,
that is Florida right
good
there.
Good, bad, and ugly. Good,
yes.
Bad, and ugly.
Alan, great to catch up, man. It's so nice to hear your voice. I'm glad you're safe, and we'll do this again soon, okay?
Pete, it's great. I miss my Chicago. Go Cubs.
And we'll see you soon.
One day.
Yeah, one day.
All right, buddy.
Well, all right. Take care. One day we'll all get together. That is Alan Hunter, one of the original MTV VJs. All right, coming up, if you're feeling depressed, isolated, we have a psychotherapist coming on at 10:35, 720 WGN.